Talk 580 KMJ presents Hometown Heroes, honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes with you every Saturday afternoon here on News Talk 580 KMJ and online at kmjnow.com. An abbreviated show today with Bulldog Baseball at 1:45, but I want to talk a little bit about a couple things I've gotten to see happen lately that I'm excited about. One, I'm sure you all read the newspaper and saw the news and heard about the groundbreaking on the Central California Veterans Home. Congratulations to Charlie Waters and all the dedicated volunteers who've worked so hard to make that a reality, and look forward to seeing how that grows and is a gem for the Valley in years to come. Another neat thing that I got to see a piece of recently was at Fresno State in that beautiful new Madden Library. There is a very touching ceremony to commemorate the first installment of the Central California War Veterans Oral History Project. Very similar to the kind of stories that you hear on this program, veterans have shared their stories with Fresno State students who have taken copious notes, who have made transcripts of their audio interviews, and will preserve those interviews in the Madden Library for years to come as part of this project. We're going to talk about it today. We're going to hear from a student. We're going to hear from a veteran who participated. And we're also going to hear from Dr. Gary Rice, the project director, and see where this all came from. So let's welcome in Dr. Rice right now. And how did you get started on this? Where did this idea come from? And why did you say there needs to be an archive here at Fresno State for our war veteran stories?
Well, I guess probably a couple things came together. I'm an old journalist, but academically, I'm an American historian with a Cold War specialty. When I taught in Texas, I used oral histories in the classroom. I taught a war and media class, and my students interviewed war correspondents and war veterans. It seemed to go very well. I got nothing but great feedback from the veterans. Time marches on. I end up at California State, and one of the things that impressed me in Fresno was, I would call it the most sincere patriotism that I'd seen anywhere. A lot of places people talk about supporting the troops, doing things for veterans, but I seemed to sense it was more of a real thing here. It wasn't just something people said, true patriotism. So that was sort of in the back of my mind. There came an opportunity to get a grant from the university for a project, and I said, why not a war veterans oral history project with the many, many thousands of them that are here? And that's how it all sort of began.
Well, it's interesting to hear that take from someone who hasn't been here their whole life. But that's music to a lot of people's ears, I think. And I like to think of Fresno as kind of the de facto headquarters of Veterans Valley USA, if you will. And people here do value the price of freedom and honor their veterans. And that's what this show is all about, of course. So you have the idea. Then you have to convince someone else that it's worth a little bit of an investment in giving you the resources and the time to do it. And was that a hard sell, or was that kind of a snap of the fingers and everybody saw the value in it?
Well, I think it happened very quickly. I did about a one-page grant proposal, outlined what we wanted to do, and that was to go out and seek dozens of oral histories in one semester using about 40 to 50 students and follow all of the standard guidelines for doing oral histories the way they do at the National Archives, the Presidential Libraries. I stress the educational value of it. Students would have to do research before they did the interviews. Students would have to do the interviews. They would go through the arduous task of transcribing and editing them. They had to get their facts right. They had to do a preparation of a document that, as it turned out, ranges from a low end of about 18 pages to over 90 pages that some students did. That's a lot of typing, that's a lot of correcting, that's a lot of editing. So I stress the educational value of it, and I think that's probably what sold it, along with the notion that we could have something special there at Madden Library, a collection of these that could keep growing and growing and growing.
You know, and you say 90 pages, and I know a lot of the veterans that participated in your project are veterans that have been on this program, and I have my theories on where the 90 pages came from. But I'll give those guys a hard time at another time. We're talking to Dr. Gary Rice, the project director for the Central California War Veterans Oral History Project at Fresno State. And I know you're still in the middle of grading a lot of these for this first installment. And I say first because I certainly hope there are more to come. What's your vision long term for what this can be to the community? And what are the chances of it continuing year after year?
Well, I think when you consider there are over 4 million veterans in California, Many of them live in the Central Valley. We have a pool that will never cease to exist. There's always going to be veterans with stories to tell out there. So we've got that. We've got plenty of veterans to interview and choose from. I'm hopeful that the university will continue funding this in perpetuity, basically. And I have to say, as word has got out about the project, I'm already getting email from people in the public I did not know. Hey, why don't you interview Uncle Charlie? Or I know a veteran that would be great for your project, that sort of thing. I've been involved in a lot of things in education over the years. This has probably had as much favorable feedback as anything I've ever done. Great comments from the veterans. They liked meeting the kids. The kids liked meeting the veterans. I think we've seen some that have almost become relationships. The veterans talk about, well, my student interviewed me. Or the students say, I really liked my veteran. And, it's sort of that kind of thing. And I know students have learned a lot of history, much, much more than they'd known before. And I think many of them probably wish they had known more. But I think we've kind of ignited a little bit of an interest in history, too.
Well, and that was a question I had, because a lot of teachers, they get locked into the classroom no matter what level we're talking about. I mean, there are elementary schools and high schools around here who do some great things with veterans and intergenerationally. But do you see a different magic when generations like this get together, when you take today's 18, 19, 20-year-olds and put them with an 85 or 90-year-old World War II veteran that are generations apart? Do you see a magic when those two worlds start to collide? And do you feel that history comes alive in a way that it couldn't in a textbook or even a documentary?
Oh, I don't think there's any question about that. And use the word magic. I think it really was there. I can sense it from reading some of these oral histories. Veterans, it's almost a cathartic in some ways to talk mm-hmm. about these things. And for students, you would not believe the number of times I see the students say in the transcript, oh, wow, did that really happen? I can't believe it. And it's obvious they're hearing about some of these things for the first time. And I told the students, and I think they all would agree, you're going to remember this assignment years down the road when you forgot a lot of things that we went over in college. You're going to remember the oral history that you did with your veteran.
And those stories are going to be there at the library, not just as a collection to say we have this collection, but for a collection to be used for other researchers to look at, for students in the future at Fresno State to tap into. And I know a lot of the veterans that participated, so I know you got some really great stories. Tell me a little bit, if you can, about the student that we're going to hear from in a moment and why he's in here with us today as a good example of what this program is capable of.
Well, this is a very unique student. He also was a veteran himself of Iraq and Afghanistan. And I met him in class, and I did not know he was a veteran until we were deep into the project. And this student also, he designed our logo. We have our own logo for this project, and he was one of the most meticulous, most reliable, careful students that I had as far as the facts and dealing with the veterans. So he's unique in that he is a veteran, and he has done the oral histories with the veterans, too.
And it's a really sharp-looking logo, and in true college logo form, there's even a few words of Latin on there. What does that say, and why did you choose those three words in Latin?
I think I will let our student answer that.
Okay. Well, I think that's perfect. Before we take a break and get to him, is there anything else that you want our listeners to know about your project and moving forward, what they can do to contribute and support it?
Well, I think that what they all should know is that, yes, it'll be around there forever. And, someday you'll have a relative that has been in the service. You'll be able to go down there and look at his or her oral history. As far as supporting the project, well, I think, if you the public continues to support veterans around here like I know they have, that sort of support will carry over into our project.
And I know when you describe starting to get emails and phone calls about it, I know what you mean, and I think you'll get some more, hopefully, after being on this program. If someone does have a veteran that they think you really ought to talk to, or if a veteran is listening and wants to participate, should he send you a letter, email you, call you? What do you think?
Any of those. The email is pretty simple. It would be Gary Rice, GaryRice, 07 at yahoo.com, or call the Department of Mass Communication and Journalism at Fresno State. Ask for me.
All right, and I will post that information on our website, too, kmjnow.com. Dr. Rice, thank you so much for what you're doing. I can't wait to see what it's going to be in the future. It's already a great thing and a great tribute to our veterans, a great gem for Fresno State to have. So congratulations on a job well done.
And thanks for having me on your show. And certainly your show is the kind of support that veterans appreciate, I know.
Right on. That's Dr. Gary Rice from Fresno State. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk to a student who not only has served our country, but is working to honor those who have also served. This is Hometown Heroes on News Talk 580 KMJ.
This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty on 580 KMJ.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. We're going to hear shortly from a World War II veteran, Luis Arceo, a recipient of the Bronze Star and the Purple Heart. But right now we're going to talk to the student who interviewed Mr. Arceo for the Central California War Veterans Oral History Project at Fresno State. You've heard from Dr. Gary Rice, the project director, about it. Now we're going to hear from one of his all-star students who is also a veteran himself. Koo Lee is originally from Kansas, was in the service in the Army Reserve, and you were actually deployed for how long?
A little over a year in Iraq and a little over a year in Afghanistan as well.
And then you decided after, were you discharged and came to Fresno State? Is that what happened?
Yes, that's correct.
Is there anything about your time overseas that kind of sharpened your focus and led to your being here and your efforts in this class?
The only thing I could say is that military service itself makes this kind of a project a lot easier because you can actually talk to your veterans simpler. You understand the military jargon and you understand what they go through. So you, on a level, you're speaking to them as if they're a sergeant above yourself and you're just simply exchanging war stories. And it makes more, it's a little bit more comfortable, but I don't like to say that I'm a veteran before I go in there. I just say that I'm a student. That way we keep it, you know, almost professional.
That said, and experiencing everything that you experienced overseas in Iraq and Afghanistan, and I know that the weapons of war and the methods of war have changed a lot in 65 years, but you interviewed two veterans, Mr. Arceo, who we'll hear from today, and also John Wolfshorndel of Chowchilla, who's been on this program before and served in the Army Air Corps in the China-Burma-India Theater. When you heard their stories, did anything kind of make you say, wow, and say, holy cow, I had no idea that you guys went through those kinds of things?
Oh, definitely, definitely. Their stories just kind of really, really opens up the imagination, but more importantly, it gives you a broader perspective of your own service. I knew that a lot of these veterans have served longer time periods than we have because we spend, you know, active Army does 6, sometimes 3 month rotations, reserve does 12, sometimes 15 month rotations, and those are long rotations, but the veterans that serve prior to us, they serve 2, 3, sometimes 4 year rotations. And it really, when you hear the stories that they have, what they've really gone through, it gives your own service, it puts it into perspective for yourself.
As far as the work you had to do for this class, did it feel like work? Was it a labor of love? What are you most proud of when you look back and see what you're able to do over the course of the project?
It was definitely a lot of work, but I would say it's definitely a labor of love. You do want to be very meticulous to be, you know, as correct as you can get, because you understand that this is not just a record. This is a national history, and it's a treasure, and you want to get it as closely correct as possible. I look at it as if it was a letter from the Civil War or the Revolutionary War. You know, those kind of accounts are so treasured now. And when you look back, you could really read about, you know, obviously, you know, the historical events, but you don't know the personal accounts of those events, except for the letters from people who have written it or the diaries. Well, this kind of oral history is the same kind of thing. And you really, really want to be, you know, put as much work as needed to be as accurate as possible.
You know, with all the veterans that I've interviewed, it seems like at least one time in every veteran's story, there's one moment in the life that seems pivotal, or you see the hand of fate or the hand of God or some kind of thing that says, wow, and it really takes your breath away. Did you have a moment like that with your veterans? Was there one aspect of one of their stories that you'd like to share that just really took you back and got your attention?
Wow, it's hard to say because there are so many of those moments, and you just keep almost every 5 minutes when they start a whole new story. It just really blows you away. You're just like, wow, this really, really happened. But I think one that really, really hits me with my first veteran was John Wilshorn. He was speaking about how they lost one of their planes over the Himalayas, and
right.
It was very difficult for him to speak about it. And it's obvious that these men were really, really close to him, and it just really shows how much emotion there is to it. And it brings back my own memories because I am close to my own platoon, my own squad, and I just couldn't imagine losing my own men. For Mr. Arceo, he speaks about how scared and how close to danger he was when there was a tank going over his foxhole. And you know, I can relate because I've been in those kind of situations before, and it does really blow you back, and those kind of things really, really makes you remember. And those are the kind of stories you want to pass on to other people.
Is it fair to say that this is the kind of class that you wish you could take a second time, or am I overstating it there? Was it too much work to quite say that?
I would, no, you're absolutely right. I think I would definitely take the class again for the oral history part of it. it's a tough class. Dr. Rice is definitely someone who makes you work for the class, and he makes you learn. But the oral history is the best part of that class.
You know, and I got to be at the ceremony for a little bit there at the library where at that ceremony, we didn't really cover this with Dr. Rice, but each student who participated brought up the veterans that he or she interviewed and said a few words. When you were in that room and listening to your fellow students describe their veterans and you saw how much it meant to the veterans to be honored, was there a sense of accomplishment or pride or fulfillment that came along with that for you? What did you take away from that ceremony?
Well, the ceremony itself, I think,
I'm putting you on the spot pretty good here. I know. I mean, it seemed to me that no matter who the student was, and you're a little older than some of the other students that were in there, whether they're male or female, that there was just a tremendous amount of respect in that room. And that's not something that you see every day. Did you have the feeling while you were there that you were at something special?
Oh, definitely. Yes, definitely. As Dr. Rice said, the ceremony is kind of the finisher to a huge semester of work. But it's not that which makes it special. It's the fact that we're inducting, we're putting records into the library, and it in itself, especially being the very first ceremony. It's like a moment in history, and I think you kind of feel it at the moment you're there. You don't understand that it's history, but you know, after a little bit, you get the aftertaste that you understand that it is going to be history, that you were at the very first, you know, oral history ceremony, and that your transcription, that your veteran, that your work is going to be the very first edition to hopefully many more editions.
Amen to that. We're talking to Ku Lee, a student at Fresno State who participated in the project and also a veteran himself. And we're going to get to one of the veterans that he interviewed, Luis Arceo, in just a moment. But before we do that, Ku, I wonder, is there something that you came away with? And I'm sure you had an impression before you did this of the World War II generation and its significance. Is there one thing after going through this semester and hearing their stories that maybe was added to your perspective? Is there one impression you have of that generation that if someone comes, a family member or someone comes to you and says, hey, what was World War II all about? What are these guys like? Why did we care? Why is this important? Do you have an answer to that?
You know, I came to an epiphany, a realization after I did these, while I was actually doing the transcription. And it's about reading about how they struggled through the Great Depression and then to face, you know, one of the greatest world international incidents ever, and also coming through and surviving it and also persevering through it. And it kind of puts my own time in perspective. You know, I realized that this is truly the greatest generation that there ever was. But then I also realized that now we are actually faced with our own problems. We, you know, kind of coming out of our own depression, and we have two separate wars. And it kind of makes me feel as if, you know, this is our chance to be the next greatest generation. And we really, really should step up, not just because the opportunity has arisen, But because of the fact that we owe it to the veterans, we owe it to the people who have sacrificed, who bled through, you know, atrocities we would never even know. We owe it to them to continue, you know, to keep this country as great it is, to put it at the same bar as which they set before us.
Amen. I could not have said that better. And that's one of the reasons that I do this show. Not only do we want to honor our veterans, but there is an inspirational value here, an empowering, a motivational situation with it, where you say, if they were willing to do this, if they could lay their lives on the line, if 400,000 Americans were willing to die, well, that's how many died, much more were willing to die, then why can't we take the same kind of approach and have that kind of love for our country? And I thought you expressed that beautifully, Ku. Thank you so much for being here, for what you're doing. And I look forward to seeing where the rest of your journey takes you. Is there anything else you want to share with our audience?
That's it. I think we've pretty much said everything.
I think you said it perfectly. That's Ku Lee. Thank you for serving our country and for serving these veterans.
Thank you, Paul.
All right, that's Ku Lee from Fresno State, a Bulldog student. And coming up, we're going to hear from the veteran that he interviewed, Luis Arceo, when Hometown Heroes continues next on News Talk 580 KMJ.
On the front line of freedom, you're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler on News Talk 580 KMJ.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Bulldog baseball coming up at 1:45. We've heard from a professor. We've heard from a student. Now let's hear from an interview subject for the Central California War Veterans Oral History Project that I've been telling you about. I really look forward to everything that's going to happen in the future with this at Fresno State, and they already have a lot to be proud of. So does Luis Arceo, who will be 88 years old this August. He is a veteran of the European Theater during World War II, saw action at the Battle of the Bulge. Has a pretty interesting story about how he came to own the Purple Heart and a Bronze Star. But let's start early on, Luis, if we can. How did you end up in the service? Because you would have been about 20 years old when the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor. Do you remember anything about that day, December 7th, 1941?
1941, I came in from doing the rounds, and they say that they had attacked Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, nobody knew nothing about Pearl Harbor. I didn't even know where it was.
Mm-hmm. And where were you at the time?
In New Mexico.
Uh-huh.
I was working for the Kennecott Copper Company.
All right.
We start talking. Don't forget it. It'll be over in 6 months.
Uh-huh.
I said, well, then why worry about it?
How long was it after that until Uncle Sam got a hold of you?
In August. In 1942,
uh-huh.
I was working at the copper company, so they called me in and said that I had gotten my draft papers. If I wanted to stay, they would sign me some deferred work well for government projects.
Uh-huh.
So you don't have to go in the service. I said, well, I want to go anyway. I guess I volunteered in a way.
Now, when you went in, most guys don't go into the service saying, I want to be in the infantry.
No, I was very lucky. I went, when I was drafted, after I led a service, I ended up in the 5th Air Force, the ground crew.
Uh-huh.
And according to what I find out, that when I was on the detached service, I didn't have to go overseas. I could spend the rest of the war in the ground server there.
But things change in war, don't they? All of a sudden, they need some bodies.
Then when they shipped me to South Dakota,
mm-hmm.
Then I was supposed to stay there. And they used to shift us from little airfields where the B-17s.
Right.
So we ended up as a guard for the airfields? For the airfields. It was a good life because you get clean linen every Friday, go to town when you want to. Then this friend of mine, we've been in the service here almost 2 years, and we haven't seen nothing. I said, well, so what? He said, why don't we volunteer for the infantry? No, I said, no, I don't think I want to do that. So anyway, he talked him into it, and we went to sign up. The captain was a retired infantry,
mm-hmm.
from during the war. You guys don't know what you're getting into. He said, infantry is no plaything. So he finally, he couldn't talk us out of it. And I said, well, it's okay, sign up. So ended up in Oregon. And the first night that we went out on bivouac, that's when I made a mistake because it was raining. We slept on that wet foxhole all night. The next morning, they gave us some rations. And that was the beginning of my infantry.
Well, and if you thought that was bad, I can't imagine what you thought at the Battle of the Bulge. But I've had so many veterans tell me, never volunteer for anything in the Army.
That's what I found out later. And I don't volunteer for nothing now either.
Well, I'm glad that you volunteered to share your story with the Oral History Project at Fresno State. And I want to ask you about that in a little bit. But let's fast forward because time is short here. You end up with the 70th Infantry Division in Europe, and you are at the Battle of the Bulge, which at the time you have no idea what the Battle of the Bulge is. You're just over there freezing your rear end off, right?
No, I had no idea till after the war what it was all about.
How bad was that? I mean, just the surviving the weather as much as the enemy fire, was that a big challenge for you?
They claim that it was the coldest weather in 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it was something that, well, it was almost as bad as being in action because you had to survive to keep from freezing. But some of the men got that frostbite.
Mm-hmm.
But I used to get my socks and put them under my arms and keep them dry. So every once in a while, I go change them again. Of course, I got frozen toes, but not as bad as others.
How did you, I know that, I'm sure that your fellow soldiers were a source of support for you, and knowing that you're all in that together has to help a little bit. But when you're facing that kind of situation and there's no end in sight, how do you get by? What do you do to survive and to make sure that you wake up the next morning?
Well, you're just there, you make the best of it.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is that some of the boys were not used to cold weather, so we had to kind of get them together and pile up on top of them to keep them warm.
Body heat is a helpful thing in a situation like that.
Yeah, so there was a lot of ways that we, you know, on our own, we just got by.
Now, when were you wounded? And how? Can you tell me that story?
I was in artillery barrages a lot of times.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes I would get sort of a concussion, but I got over it. The first day that we went into battle, we didn't know what it was all about. The first experience I had was the first artillery barrage. It was on the first day. We went through that, and a lot of our captain was killed. And the sergeant was wounded, and so just left us. So we went into the town where they would get. While we were in town, as the sun came out, I guess the enemy could see where we were at.
Sure.
So either a tank shell or it went through the window and burst, and that explosion put me for the wall, and my hand hit the ceiling.
Wow.
And then nobody was killed, but most of them got hurt. So there was one instance of, I went through a lot of them besides that one. But that was, the one that burned my face was the worst.
Tell me about that. What do you remember? How did it happen?
Well, at the forest, you couldn't see anything, so I was the first scout in my company.
Mm-hmm.
So he told me to go ahead and scout around so the company could move. And then at that time, one artillery shell or a mortar shell hit, and that's where I got burned.
How close to you did the shell hit?
It must have been pretty, well, when the shell hits, the shrapnel scatters.
Right.
But the fire from that, if you're close, you don't get wounded by shrapnel. You get probably shocked by the fire.
Right.
And sometimes you don't even get burned, you just get shot because it probably blow you to one side or the other. I couldn't tell what kind of shell it was.
Did it knock you unconscious?
For a little minute, but when I tried to open my eyes, I could see the men walking toward me upside down.
Upside down?
Yeah.
Because you're on the ground.
Yeah, they were walking. So they got me and see where I got, if I had gotten hurt by shrapnel. So then they carried me to the aid station. Then they sent me to the hospital.
So your face was badly burned?
Yeah.
And they wrapped your entire face in bandages?
For three months.
So for 3 months, you couldn't see anything?
The last month I could because they
unwrapped it a little bit.
They unwrapped some of it, yeah. But all I unwrapped was here and here.
And what got you through that time? What were you thinking about while you're sitting in that aid station or the hospital and recovering? Did you think, wow, I really could have been killed? Or did you think, I don't know how my life is going to be from this point on? I mean, what kind of things go through your mind?
Those kind of things don't even bother me now.
Yeah?
I just went for what was going on. No complaints, no nothing. All through the war, it never bothered me to.
Did you feel like that you were fortunate to survive that? That you easily could have been killed that day?
Yeah. After I got well in the hospital, I just think, well, am I going to see again or I'm going to be all just burned out? But then I just took it easy and went through it. That's it.
And so eventually they take that bandage off your face?
Yeah, they did, yeah.
And how long did it take you to actually see and feel like you were normal again?
About a week.
And then you got to come home and live happily ever after, right?
Yeah.
No, you had to go back to the front, didn't you?
Oh, from the hospital?
Yeah.
There was a time when the American army was on retreat.
Mm-hmm.
So they called me they said, we're sending you back to the front, but you might not be with your own outfit. He said, but there's no trucks going over there. We're going to send you in a supply truck. And from there, you'll have to be transferred from truck to truck.
Hmm.
So then we started. When I got on that truck, it took me about 3 days to get close to some outfit that was close to my division.
Mm-hmm.
But I finally got there with the help of supply trucks that were going there.
And obviously the wounds that you received qualified you for the Purple Heart, and you were awarded it at that time, but you never knew about it, and it wasn't recorded correctly?
No.
So you didn't get it until just recently, right?
Just recently, yeah. And I told him about it. He says, you know, he says, I got a friend at the VA that might help you.
Uh-huh.
Then the guy walked in. He says, oh, yeah, here it is, Tony Pacheco. I'll interview you and see if I can do something for you. Then I told him about, that's why nobody can do nothing, because the discharge says injured none.
Right.
So then he wrote to St. Louis or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They start sending me information. So then they send me the Purple Heart and send me all these medals.
Yeah, so now you have the Purple Heart and you have the Bronze Star after all these years. And certainly, I think everyone who's listening can...
And the infantry badge.
Combat infantry badge.
Badge. And some others I don't know what they're all about.
Well, you've got time to learn, because obviously you're in great shape for almost 88. Tell me this, in participating in this project at Fresno State and sharing your story, knowing that it's going to be preserved there for posterity, what does that mean to you? Why were you willing to talk about your experiences, and why do you think it's important to preserve those stories?
I think it's important to me because my daughters were always proud of me being in the service. And when I started all this, they all started to ask questions and told me to go ahead and...
So your daughters are learning things about you that they never knew before.
They never knew. Well, I used to tell them, but no proof.
Now they know you weren't making it up.
No, they know that I'm making it up.
Well, Mr. Arceo, thank you for serving our country, and thank you for telling your story so the rest of us can know what men like you did all those years ago. Is there anything else that you want to say about your time in the war, why you did what you did, and what you think the rest of us should remember about World War II?
Just something that happened again. What I do think about now is that if they're going to stand in Iraq,
mm-hmm.
I think those guys should be back home.
I understand you feeling for the men in uniform today. Is there any one thing for you from the time that you spent in the Army during World War II? Is there any one thing that you're most proud of?
Proud of the whole thing, especially my decision to volunteer when I didn't have to.
Mm-hmm. That I have not talked to a lot of guys who have made that choice to volunteer to go to the front lines. A lot of guys were looking to get away from the front lines.
Yeah.
But the choice you made is very unique.
That music means we're out of time on today's program. Bulldog baseball right around the corner. Mr. Arceo, again, thank you so much for serving our country, for sharing about it with us this afternoon. And that music also reminds me that coming up on Memorial Day, May 31st at 2 o'clock at the Veterans Memorial Museum in downtown Fresno, a concert by the Sounds of Freedom Military Band. You won't want to miss this. It is free admission, but any donations made that day will go to benefit the Veterans Memorial Museum, home of the Legion of Valor in downtown Fresno. So I'd love to see you there on May 31st. Thanks for listening to Hometown Heroes today on News Talk 580 KMJ.